Today on Wikinews, two bombings in the Middle East leave dozens killed and injured. President of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, meets with UK's new prime minister. A 24-year-old teacher is returned to France. And in history, today is the 30th anniversary of the Mount St. Helens eruption in Washington State.
We are directly over Mount St. Helens right now, and there is no question at all that the volcanic activity has begun. You can see smoke and ash pouring from the top of the mountain, especially on the north side of the mountain.
Today is Tuesday, May 18th, 2010. I'm Dan Harlow, and this is Wikinews. A bomb explosion in the northwest frontier province of Pakistan has killed at least 12 people. The deputy superintendent of police was said to be the target, and the bomb, which was planted on a bicycle, killed the superintendent along with the driver and guard of his convoy. Officials stated the bomb, which was remote-controlled, was detonated when he had been leaving his house and as he was entering his car. The death toll was confirmed at 12 dead and 10 wounded, and they are being treated at a local hospital. According to the head of the hospital's casualty department, the dead included three policemen, including one officer and nine civilians, and that there were women and children among the dead. A state of emergency has been declared by the hospital. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the attack. Across the border in Afghanistan, a car bomb attack which targeted a NATO convoy in the capital of Kabul has killed or wounded dozens of people. The death toll was not confirmed, and estimates range from 10 to 20 deaths. 47 people were injured in the attack. The incident occurred at the Darulaman Crossroads, near a U.S.-Afghan military base and the parliament. According to Ian Baxter, a spokesperson for the International Security Assistance Force, the target of the attack was an ISAF convoy. Six NATO troops died in the attack, alongside several civilians. The bomber had been driving a car filled with explosives, which was detonated at around 8:15 a.m. local time. The Taliban have claimed responsibility for the attack, saying a resident of Kabul had been sent to, quote, destroy five foreign vehicles and damage one more. Today's attack was part of an al-Fatah operation, and we will continue attacking foreigners and government security forces and their associates. Hamid Karzai, president of Afghanistan, said on national television that it was a heartbreaking attack and that we are condemning the attack in the strongest terms. Meanwhile, yesterday, Karzai visited the UK for talks with newly elected Prime Minister David Cameron. The meeting took place at Chequers, the Prime Minister's official country residence, and is Cameron's first since last week's general election. Karzai was en route back to Afghanistan from a visit to the United States, where he held talks with President Barack Obama. Downing Street called the meeting an opportunity for early discussions between the Afghan president and the new prime minister, pointing out that Karzai himself had requested the meeting to follow up on conversations the two leaders had had while Cameron was leader of the opposition. According to a spokesman, the discussions had centered around Karzai's visit to the U.S., which he called very successful, and, quote, both the president and prime minister agreed that the relationship between Afghanistan and Britain should be further strengthened. The president and the prime minister expressed their admiration for the courage and skill of the British military in Afghanistan and the sacrifices that British forces have made. After the meeting with Karzai, Cameron held further discussions with his defense secretary, Liam Fox, along with senior civil servants and service chiefs. The UK contingent of NATO forces in Afghanistan currently numbers around 9,500, the second largest contingent after the United States. 24-year-old Clotilde Reese, a French teaching assistant who had been detained in Iran for 10 months, returned to France on Sunday. Iranian officials arrested Reese as she was about to leave the country on July 1, 2009. The arrest came after she had attended a protest regarding the country's elections, with the officials calling her a foreign spy. Reese was in Iran for a 5-month teaching position in Isfahan and was later sent from Tehran's Evin prison to the French embassy on bail. During the trial, which included over 100 others who were thought to be trying to start a coup, she pleaded not guilty and said that she only went to the protest because she was curious. Reese was originally given 2 5-year sentences of jail time for spying and provoking unrest, but the sentence was reduced to a fine equal to about $300,000. Reese's lawyer said that the money was given on Saturday, freeing the young academic. Reese landed at Vélizy-Villacomblay Air Base Sunday afternoon. She met with French President Nicolas Sarkozy at the Élysée Palace in Paris shortly after. Sarkozy later released a statement thanking the presidents of Brazil, Senegal, and Syria for aiding in Reese's return, but did not elaborate on the role each played. The governments of both France and Iran have denied rumors that Reese's freedom was part of a deal involving two Iranians in France. One of the two, Mijad Kakavand, was released a couple of weeks ago after France refused on May 5th to extradite him to the United States. The other, Ali Vakali Rad, will likely receive parole and return to Iran later today. Kakavand had supposedly tried to give U.S. goods to the Iranian military, while Rad was responsible for the assassination of former Iranian Prime Minister Shapour Bakhtiar in 1991. And finally, in sports, for those of you who have been keeping up with the Gippsland Football League, Wikinews contributor Patrick Gillett interviewed Andy Thistling of the Traralgon Football Club. Andy is the statistician for the Gippsland Football League club's senior side. The Gippsland Football League is the only major Australian rules football competition in the Gippsland region, according to the Victorian County Football League. So please visit wikinews.org to read Gillett's interview, as well as other exclusive Wikinews interviews from around the world. And on this day in history, it was 30 years ago today that Mount St. Helens in Washington State erupted, causing massive damage to the landscape and killing 57 people, as well as thousands of animals, and damaging or destroying more than 4 billion board feet of timber, mainly by the lateral blast. The eruption was classified on the 9-point Volcanic Explosivity Index as a VEI-5 event, meaning an event that releases a volume of at least 1 cubic kilometer with immediate exceptional effects on the surrounding area. Such events average about once per 50 years around the globe, and Mount St. Helens was the only significant eruption to occur in the lower 48 U.S. states since the 1915 eruption of Lassen Peak in California, which was actually slightly more powerful. The event began back on March 15, 1980, with the detection of several small earthquakes, which indicated that magma may have begun moving below the volcano. Prior to this, Mount St. Helens had remained dormant from its last period of activity in the 1840s and 50s. Then, on March 18th at 3:45 p.m. local time, a shallow 4.2 magnitude earthquake, centered below the volcano's north flank, signaled the volcano's violent return after 123 years of hibernation. A gradually building earthquake swarm saturated area seismographs and started to climax at about noon on March 25th, reaching peak levels in the next 2 days, including an earthquake registering 4.5 on the Richter scale. A total of 174 shocks of magnitude 2.6 or greater were recorded during those 2 days. Then, on March 27th,
a 250-foot wide crater opened, spewing ash and steam. It came as no surprise to geologists who had predicted 2 years earlier that Mount St. Helens would erupt before the end of the century. Volcano experts from the government, the University of Washington, and elsewhere rushed in with electronic equipment to measure the slightest twinge.
2 days later, on March 29th, a second new crater in a blue flame, probably created by burning gases, was observed on the mountain. Static electricity generated from the ash clouds rolling down the volcano sent out lightning bolts that were up to 2 miles long. 93 separate outbursts were reported on March 30th, and increasingly strong harmonic tremors were first detected on April 1st, alarming geologists and prompting Governor Dixie Lee Ray to declare a state of emergency on April 3rd. With scientists now in place all around the mountain, predictions of what may happen became more accurate, especially those of David A. Johnston, a volcanologist from the United States Geological Survey.
In the initial phases, we'd see probably very large eruptions that would extend high into the air. This would spread ash over large areas in western Washington, maybe possibly in an extreme case even farther east. In the near flanks of the volcano, there would be more damage done by possibly hot avalanches, pyroclastic flows. Farther downstream, we could see mud flows and floods.
However, not everyone was heeding the warnings.
Hey, you don't mind working in the shadow of the mountain, then?
No, not at all. And nothing to be scared of. More danger from one of them trees falling on the backside than there is mountain of exploding.
For the rest of April and early May, a bulge on the mountain was growing 5 to 6 feet per day, and by mid-May, it had extended more than 400 feet north. This bulge presumably corresponded to the volume of magma below that was pushing into the volcano, deforming its surface. Geologists announced that sliding of the bulge area was the greatest immediate danger. Again, David Johnston.
Because this is such a symmetrical volcano and because the crater is so high, if there's an explosion, it's probable that the debris, the very hot incandescent ash that would come down all sides. But right now, there's a very great hazard due to the fact that the glacier is breaking up on this side of the volcano, on the north side, and that could produce a very large avalanche hazard.
Yet, despite the warnings and visible signs of the mountain preparing to erupt, some people who lived in the area had no intention of leaving. Most famously was Harry R. Truman, the owner of the Mount St. Helens Lodge at Spirit Lake, right at the base of the mountain.
That's my life. Spirit Lake and Mount St. Helens is my life, folks. I've lived there 50 years. It's a part of me. That mountain and that lake is a part of Truman, and I'm a part of it.
At 7 a.m. on May 18th, David Johnston, who had Saturday night duty at an observation post about 6 miles north of the volcano, radioed in the results of some laser beam measurements he had made moments earlier. Mount St. Helens' activity that day did not show any change from the pattern of the preceding month. The rate of bulge movement, sulfur dioxide emission, and ground temperature readings did not reveal any unusual changes that might have indicated a catastrophic eruption. Suddenly, at 8:32 a.m., a magnitude 5.1 earthquake centered directly below the north slope triggered that part of the volcano to slide, approximately 10 seconds after the shock. One of the largest landslides in recorded history, the slide traveled at 110 to 155 miles per hour and moved across Spirit Lake's west arm.
Oh, I just felt an earthquake. Now we've got an eruption down here. Now we got a big slide coming off. The slide is coming off of the west slope. Now we got a whole great big eruption out of the crater. And we got another that opened up on the west side, a whole west side, northwest side is sliding down. All right, we got it, boy. The whole northwest section and north section blown up. It's coming up over the ridge towards me. I'm going to back out of here.
CITAM and CATS FM urges everyone to not panic.
As most of you already know, we had a major eruption occurring at 8:32 approximately this morning on Mount St. Helens. It does appear that the northwest flank of the mountain seems to be gone. They have indicated that there have been some mud flows that have come down the southeast flank of the mountain. Emergency procedures have been put into effect. At 10:15 this morning, Cowlitz County reported that a 12-foot wall of water was coming down the Tula River, and this was verified by the Washington State Patrol.
Most of St. Helens' former north side became a rubble deposit 17 miles long, averaging 150 feet thick. Thousands of trees were torn from the surrounding hillside after the lake was sloshed 800 feet up the hillside. All the water in Spirit Lake was temporarily displaced by the landslide, sending 600-foot-high waves crashing into a ridge north of the lake. As the water moved back into its basin, it pulled with it thousands of trees felled by a superheated wall of volcanic gas and searing ash and rock that overtook the landslide seconds before. Gary Rosenquist, who was camping 11 miles away, managed to take a series of photographs of the initial blast, which allowed scientists to be able to reconstruct the landslide. Rosenquist and his photographs survived because the blast was deflected by local topography 1 mile short of his location. However, Harry R. Truman and David Johnston were not so fortunate. Both men were killed in the blast. The event was the most deadly and economically destructive volcanic eruption in the history of the United States. 57 people were killed and 200 homes, 27 bridges, 15 miles of railways, and 185 miles of highway were destroyed. In all, the cost of the eruption was $1.1 billion in damage. Then U.S. President Jimmy Carter surveyed the damage and said it looked more desolate than a moonscape. A film crew was dropped by helicopter on Mount St. Helens on May 23rd to document the destruction. Their compasses, however, spun in circles and they quickly became lost.
Look at this. It doesn't even look like the same country. Even the valleys have changed.
It nothing matches the map.
Where's Spirit Lake? Is that it over there?
I can't believe I've camped up in this area. It doesn't look like any place I've ever been before.
In all, Mount St. Helens released 24 megatons of thermal energy, 7 megatons of which was a direct result of the blast. This is the equivalent to 1,600 times the size of the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima, Japan, at the end of World War II. The ashfall created some temporary but major problems with transportation, sewage disposal, and water treatment systems. Visibility was greatly decreased during the ashfall, closing many highways and roads. Interstate 90 from Seattle to Spokane was closed for a week and a half. Air travel was disrupted up to 2 weeks as several airports in eastern Washington shut down because of ash accumulation and poor visibility. Fine-grained, gritty ash caused substantial problems for internal combustion engines and other mechanical and electrical equipment. The ash contaminated oil systems and clogged air filters and scratched moving surfaces. Fine ash caused short circuits in electrical transformers, which in turn caused power blackouts. Though the area around the eruption was devastated, some life had survived.
One way that a lot of animals survived on the morning of May 18th in 1980 was to be below ground. For some animals, they not only live below ground, but all of the nutrients that they require come from below ground resources. A good example of that is the animal that made this mound, a pocket gopher. Not only do pocket gophers stay underground and they can survive with the roots and bulbs that were underneath the volcanic material, but they actually help the new plants that are coming in to reestablish.
In the months and years that followed the blasts, scientists were given a unique opportunity to study the biology of the landscape, and in 1982, President Ronald Reagan and the U.S. Congress established the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument, a 110,000-acre area around the mountain which would allow the region to gradually return to its natural state. In 1987, the U.S. Forest Service reopened the mountain to climbing, though in 2004 it was closed for 2 years during a period of renewed geological activity. Mount St. Helens is still considered an active volcano, and though it is unknown when it will erupt again, scientists know it is just a matter of time before the next major eruption.
Well, if you look a little closer, you'll see there's really lots of living things.
I bet it used to be pretty here.
It was beautiful.
And those are the top headlines for Tuesday, May 18th, 2010. This has been the Audio Wikinews Brief. To receive the latest news, please visit wikinews.org, presenting up-to-date, relevant, newsworthy, and entertaining content without bias. Wikinews is a free service and is funded by your generous donations. Click on the donate link on our homepage to learn how you can contribute. This recording has been released under the Creative Commons 2.5 license.